listening to the AI in Motion podcast with JP Morgenthal.
Hi, everyone. I'm JP Morgenthal, and I'm the host of AI in Motion, the podcast about everything AI in supply chain and manufacturing. And today I have a guest with me, Sarvi Sharma, who is the senior director at Alvarez & Marsal in the Southeast Asia in Australia. And he is in the performance improvement practice based out of Singapore. So I'm doing the night, he's doing the morning. That's the way it works when people are doing you a favor. 17 years of experience working across 20 countries in APAC, Africa, Europe, and North America. So this guy has mega miles. If you're looking for anyone who has extra miles, he probably has them. I don't know anymore after COVID. A lot of people lost theirs, but he certainly had them at one time. He specializes in rapid value creation, distress turnarounds, strategic cost reduction programs across private equity and corporate clients, in consumer, retail, energy, and natural resources, as well as industrial goods. But his expertise is in procurement and supply chain improvement, and that's why we've asked him here today to talk to us. Sarvi's already looked at and started investigating how artificial intelligence will affect his practice areas, and he's talked to some of his clients about it. And so what we're going to do is we're going to actually spend some time. We're going to look at and ask Sarvi to tell us kind of some of the horror stories from what he's seeing out there in the market when he walks into a client. And of course, we know when he leaves, it's pristine. It's working. It's butter. But when he walks in, it's a mess. And so we're going to find out a little bit about what that looks like. And now that we have this new technology, what he thinks about how this technology might have actually worked in projects that he's already completed and some of them that he's working on. How you doing, Sarvi?
Hey, JP, I'm doing well, and thank you for having me on your podcast. It's an honor, and look forward to our interaction.
Fantastic. Sorry, supply chain's huge, and there's so many different aspects of it, and which is what I love about it, right? It's question number one, fun question. Okay, this is a bucket list item with me. Have you ever gotten to use the term bullwhip effect with a client yet?
Perhaps I have. I mean, consultants speak with a lot of jargon, right? I'm guessing I have.
I have never gotten to use the bullwhip effect. I know what the bullwhip effect is, but I've never gotten to use it. So I just wanted to know. Wow, that is very cool if you've gotten to use the words bullwhip effect with a client. That's right. Mr. Jones, you're suffering from bullwhip effect. Let's talk a little bit about some of... Now, I'm going to give you a little context here. When I was deep into the supply chain, I was working with retailers, I was working with people who were doing distribution, and the problems were, more dramatic because the technology hadn't yet really emerged to what we have today. And so, looking back into the supply chain picture now, it's probably about 8 years later, right? What does it look like? Have we progressed at all with regard to what the problems are that are plaguing supply chain companies today?
I guess we have. So see, we work across different client types, different industries, and each of them are on their own maturity journey. But for sure, in terms of the whole process around data capture, automation, how to digest that data, how to make different systems and functions talk, basically, from a data perspective. I think those solutions have evolved a lot. So you do see a lot more, cohesive data available, which allows you to run more across function, across practice analytics, get true insights, basically. Having said that, it's not like a one answer fits all type of a situation. Like different clients, as I said, are on different journeys. And to some extent, it's a function of which part of the world you are in as well. So Asia is as an example, an area, Asia and Australia is the primary market where I focus on. It's not one homogeneous continent or region, right? Like right. You have different countries on different paths. And the favorite consultant word, it depends which country and client you are talking around, about.
That's a fair statement. Let me help put some more context on it. Somebody said to me today that's in the business, companies are, from a maturity standpoint, at industry 3.0, 3.5, and they're happy with that. They're not looking at industry 4.0 or industry 5.0. Would you agree with that statement? Or, you know, what do you, from what you're seeing, is there a desire to move ahead and some major blockages and hurdles?
It's a great question, and we often get asked this question by our clients when we try to speak with these 2.0, 3.0, 4.0, right? Like the first question is how, right? How is it different from the previous one? And secondly, what's the ROI basically, right? So it's a very industry dependent answer as well to a large extent. And I think to some extent, a lot of people and parties have been guilty of overusing and abusing this term as well to some extent, right? I think I do see some resistance from stakeholders and leaders specifically when you try to throw these terms around. And the case is very specific cases, what's different versus the previous version and what's the ROI.
That makes sense. I mean, everything should be value-based. What am I getting for it? What's the ROI? What's the investment? The entire equation is a big risk mitigation equation, right? So give me what you would say is the number one issue that you typically see when you engage clients these days? Like, what's the number one problem that they're coming to you about?
So I think if I speak to procurement and supply chain specifically, right, because those are the areas where I spend a disproportionate amount of my time, I think the biggest, and I won't say a gap area, it's more like the need and the opportunity from a requirement perspective. The biggest priorities would be, number one, how am I driving an insights-driven performance improvement? So basically, how am I using my existing data to drive better decision-making for the organization? That's number one. Number two is, am I getting the right output out of my resources? So this could be an effectiveness and an efficiency play both, basically, right? How am I placed versus, let's say, my industry peers? Number three question would be the top priority on all supply chain and procurement professional personnel's mind is risk mitigation, right? How am I staying ahead of the curve? How am I mitigating risk in my supply chain, both internal and external risk? And becomes more interesting, you know, as supply chains diversify, expand, become more networked compared to how they were in the past. And number four priority for supply chain folks and procurement folks is compliance, right? So these are the top four burning points or burning issues that we see. Number one, insights to drive better decision making. Secondly, efficiency of and return on resources, basically. Third is mitigating risk in supply chain, and fourth is compliance. So these are the four key things. You ask any supply chain leader, they would be focusing on how do we solve for each of them and drive towards a better state.
So I have questions about each of them. Let me start with compliance. What are we looking at when we say compliance? Is it things like import, export, requirements and policies and tariffs and things like that? Is that what we're talking about when we talk about compliance?
Yeah, so it's a wide area. So JP, you're right. It's a wide area with a lot of touch points, but I'll just speak to a couple of them and, you know, the ones which probably link back to where we are seeing a heavy play on AI, right? Compliance, a good use case, again, speaking to a little bit of Asia context on this, from a purchasing context, is following and implementing purchasing policies basically to the dot, right? So, which is in terms of if you typically look at a spend profile for a client, there would be some large suppliers and large transactions, which are very nicely managed, very nicely looked at essentially. But it's the low tier spend, let's say below threshold spend, which is a bit of a problem area for two reasons. Number one, these are very large number of transactions we are talking about. And secondly, this is an area which is sort of underinvested and a little bit neglected, because you know it's not where the true value lies. You are just supposed to keep the hygiene factor in here and manage it, right? So this is a big compliance watch out, or an area for a lot of companies where lies quite a bit of leakage as well, basically, right? So this is an area where I feel AI is doing a lot of work to.
Sounds almost simplify. Like years ago, I one of the things that I had gotten to do was I was the architect for a P-card expense management system. It sounds like the kind of thing that would be, you know, useful. Or that's the kind of expenses that you're looking at here. It's almost P-card level expenses versus large invoice, net 90, net 120 type of purchases.
Absolutely. Yeah. Spot on. So you've picked up a great use case. And yeah, it's P-card expenses. So a lot of things can be managed through P-cards. But then there are transactions beyond, let's say, P-cards. And to be honest, JP, not all companies are able to adapt a P-card type of a solution as well, right? So they still have to depend on some of these solutions. So from an AI perspective, I think, and you know, often you get asked this question, which are the first set of jobs and areas which AI will be disrupting, right? So this is one area where the whole linkage of automation as well as AI-driven insights to look at big data, look at insights, look at past purchasing trends, look for inconsistencies basically between how it is being done right now versus, let's say, how it is set up in policy. So this is where I think a lot of companies in the market are coming up with solutions. So you see for solutions from Zip, Globality, LightSource, etc., a bunch of these companies have solutions which help you in managing what we call as tail spend, basically, in procurement language, which is anything and everything from, you know, running tenders as per predefined rules, running small bids as per predefined rules, doing a decently thorough analysis, coming up to, let's say, the sourcing manager for approvals. Now, previously, these things have been done by dedicated desks, dedicated teams, often in an Asia type for context in a very diversified and a disaggregated manner. So for example, an Asia-based conglomerate, which has manufacturing sites in Thailand, Vietnam, Indonesia, and different parts of Asia. How do you make sure, sitting here in Singapore or let's say in head office, you have a complete control over how these transactions are being managed? Are they within the guardrails? Are they compliant as per policy, right? So all of this is getting layered and solutioned through AI. A lot of companies have made the investments in this and are starting to see returns. As I said, it's not a big value creation area. You won't save a lot of dollars, but having that assurance that all the policies are being followed, there is no favoritism, no personal element involved in this, I think that's a big assurance for supply chain and procurement folks. Yeah.
I could see it's a ripe area for fraud, very much so. Especially with the volume of transactions, it's easy for people inside who know the system to be able to try to work around the system.
Absolutely.
To make... Yeah, you know, nobody's going to know if I give this job to my brother-in-law, or nobody knows if, right? Yeah, I get it. I could see. So the number one piece. Let's go back to your number one, data insights, right? What I'm seeing is that businesses, there's a lot of human labor still going on in prepping the data, pulling the data out of existing systems. In what was previously business intelligence, BI type of activities, Tableau and system, you know, building dashboards, ETL pipelines, but very human-led initiatives to go get the data because the data is not ready to really be examined. And those dashboards are very proprietary or unifunctional, I should say. They're very directed to a particular answer. And it sounds like they want to leverage the tools to be able to be dynamic. So, you know, with regard to that, right, how, you know, do they ask you to for help in or do they realize that their data is not ready to really be part of a dynamic AI intelligence agency?
Yeah, and the short answer is yes. I mean, we do that level of assessment for clients as to what state they are in and what would that journey, let's say, from the current state to good to great would look like? What are the pit stops and things? But it's an upcoming area. Like, I mean, for most clients, you will see data systems are still, you know, spread out and a lot more disintegrated than where you would want it to be. Yeah.
Is that an area you take? That you provide is going in and doing that low level or, you know, of data re-architecture, master data management, or, you know, at least data identification?
Yes. Data quality? Yeah. Short answer is yes. And I think the real solution in solving this for the client is a few parties and a few suppliers coming in together to solve it. So that's how it would work. But I think getting a little bit deeper into what are some of the use cases, right? So once we are able to solve for this, right? Once we are able to look at data, I think should we talk about JP how AI is helping address some of these and how it's helping drive insights in these areas? Is that something we should discuss?
Sure, I'd love to hear. Yeah. You know, if you have ideas, I definitely want to hear them. I mean, you're absolutely. In it.
So great. So no, I think this is one area, honestly, where I see AI creating a massive, massive amount of impact. Right, like just raw data coming from different systems. I have seen the whole generative AI journey here from, you know, just being able to synthesize, cleanse data, getting it to a usable form to now almost transitioning to becoming, in a procurement sense, a negotiation advisor, so to speak, right? So things that you would expect, a generative AI solution being able to digest all the last 5 to 10 years of bids, tenders that you have conducted in the past. And this is, by the way, especially important for very large companies, you know, who have spread out global operations where data rests in several right. systems and in different shapes and forms, right? So being able to synthesize all of that, being able to inform a procurement manager sitting in Asia as to, hey, in the past, in your company in Europe, this category manager has used this type of a sourcing approach and these suppliers, and these are the outcomes they have got, right? So that whole layer of being able to tie the overall history, combine insights in a commodity-based type of an environment, combine insights based on commodity pricing and trends, all of that package and coming in together, it's AI is almost becoming like a negotiation advisor. So we have the use cases in terms of what sourcing technique to use. Should you go for a tender versus it's a category where you should try to auction? AI is at play.
Where is this knowledge today, right? Assumedly, this has to be built as a knowledge base that a generative AI inference engine can bring in and use, using some sort of RAG technique, right? Or an embedding. So somebody's got to build this. Who's building this?
Yeah. So it's a great question. Honestly, we are still on that journey. I would say some of the large providers that you expect, basically, right? And I wouldn't like to name them. You probably know who they are. They are a little behind on this curve, but I think it's the smaller and nimbler ones, such as GEP, Procurify, Globality, Zip, LightSource. I can name a bunch of them. So these are those niche solution providers who are able to, work across systems, deploy some bolt-on solutions on existing data systems, essentially, to come up with these very agile, quick return type of solutions.
But is there somebody in the company that's, is there a role, is there a new role called like librarian that is now responsible for aggregating the tribal knowledge across countries and division in an attempt to make sure that they have, hey, everybody, you tell me what, I need all your procurement paperwork so that we can know, I need all the contracts that you did with this particular vendor, right? So that we can see how we negotiated with this vendor in each country, right? That's unstructured data. So it's got to become, it has to get brought into the system and made available. There's somebody who's got to own that inside, right?
It's a great point. And honestly, this is one of those debates we get into when we work across functions, basically, right? So all the roles are evolving, basically, right? If you come to think of it, a traditional CIO's or IT organization job is not what you are describing, right? Basically.
I'm coming to Alvarez and Marcel. I expect that one of the things that your organization is going to bring, as opposed to if I went out and got IBM or Oracle or somebody else, some other company, tech company to come in and lead this, is organizational change management, right? You're telling me how I need to restructure my business so that I can better take care of this.
Absolutely. No, exactly. And that's what we do. There is that element of us leading the charge first and helping solve it for the client. But then there is that element of sustainability as well. So we need to create internal champions with the clients as well who can sustain the change, right? Like the type of transformations we are talking about, JP, take years, right? There'll be a lot of upfront value creation. But you need to create those internal champions. Yeah, so that's what we do.
Yeah, I guess I'm looking at the intro point. Well, I'm thinking it even from the sales perspective, going into the CEO. What are we selling? The COO, the CFO. This is what I'm selling you. It may take 5 years, but this is what we're attacking. Yeah. And here are the problems and challenges we've seen with other clients. Are you really ready to bite into this apple? And at this point in time, right? So, let me jump to inventory management, because I love inventory management. Tell me, you and I were talking, and you've seen some issues still going on at something as esoteric and mundane as managing inventory. What do you usually see when what kind of problems are you seeing with customers when you come in?
So I think this is one area where a lot has changed in the last 5 years, right? Like, right from starting from COVID-led supply chain disruptions, followed by all the geopolitical situation we have been, right? So a lot of rules written around this have been thrown out of the window, basically. Gone are those days where, you could just set up your planning parameters in your inventory management tool, where you could set up your reorder point, you could set up, let's say, your safety stock levels and forget it and shut it and expect people to operate it. We can't operate in that environment because the supply chains have become so complex and so intermingled. So it's not just the risk of supply that you are talking at your supplier's end. You are talking about the risk management for your suppliers of the supplier, right? So what we call in our space as tier N risk mitigation or tier N risk management, basically, right? So you have to think around, just giving you a use case, basically. If I have, I'm a manufacturing company, I've set up some planning parameters around reorder points, safety stock, typical lead time to supply for my supplier,
right,
without considering what is the supply chain this supplier integrates back into. So who are his suppliers? What are the risks at their end, right? If I don't consider those parameters into my thinking and into my model, something will break, and something will break very soon, right? Because you see all of these disruptions, all of these issues, a ship getting stuck in Suez Canal, the latest skirmish in South Asia right now, the Russia, Ukraine, or China side disruptions, which keep interrupting, like all of these have become so frequent that every few months you run into a major supply chain blockage or issue, right? So this is where, and again, speaking back to the point that we were discussing, how is AI solving it? So you have some fantastic use cases here, basically. Use cases such as, for example, a bunch of suppliers are focusing on this, but if you were to use some of the generative AI solutions and ask for, hey, this is my supplier network, what should I be doing differently, basically, around this, right? So those will link back to the suppliers of the suppliers. So basically dive deep into your supplier's supply chain and come back with, hey, these are your current risks, basically, based on so and so factors, and advise you on what you should be doing from your planning parameters perspective. So as an example, currently you have a safety stock of 30 days, and this is your lead time. But if this happens, if this scenario plays out, you should set your safety stock to 60 days, and your lead time will become so and so, right? So imagine all of this.
I did some work years ago with GM, and we got very deep into the tier one, tier two, tier three suppliers. You start to look at Mopar has suppliers. You get to some of, we found, because we were doing EDI at the time. We were involved in B2B based on EDI and using XML as a medium for exchange. And so one of the things that we found, as you start to get lower and lower on these, on the food chain, is that you might end up at a $30 million manufacturer, mom and pop manufacturer, who at that time was still using, limited technologies. They hadn't really advanced. They probably still have people in the back office entering stuff daily, taking the invoice paperwork from receiving that was manually signed off and checked off by somebody, and that goes, and then they go into their inventory management system and update that there instead of having barcodes and smart shelving and things like that. Yeah. So where's that data? How is that? Do you see that data ever flows out of that? I mean, or is it just probability that you're talking about?
It's a combination. You're right. The data for those type of suppliers and supply chain may not be fully visible, but as supply chain planners, we have to plan for that, right? So what you are expecting from your generative AI solution in this case is to give you that insight that in this type of a situation, you should expect a supplier, a mom and pop type supplier that you were just describing, will not be able to service you in this lead time, and hence you should change your parameters basically around it, right? So I think that's the insight. Sometimes you can't solve for your suppliers, but you can solve for your network and your supply chain, right? So that's the insight.
And for the listeners, I just want to point out something here that's really interesting. Sorry we didn't mention it. He has been talking a lot about generative AI. And what he's talking about now, generative AI can do to agree, but actually I just wrote about this and I positioned it as the analogy around the supply chain, right? You know, an analyst might have a gut feel that a particular supplier may not be able to make their lead time, but they don't have the if you ask them why, and it's a gut feel, right? And that's generative AI. it's a gut feel based upon patterns I've seen that there's a X percent probability that they may, you know, there may be a problem in the supply chain, and you should probably add 10 days. When you go to neurosymbolic AI, which are the next level of transformers, you might hear about it in the form of deep research, right? This is a different part. This is a different way to implement the transformers. It's not just based upon proximity and probability, but it's actually based on creating knowledge graphs about the data. So the data is actually encoded differently than it is with generative, and actually has the ability to reason. So it can, when you say, why do you think that this particular company may not make, you know, their due date or their delivery date, it'll say, well, you know, they're only X amount of, in size. They, you know, based upon past performance that we've been able to see, there's Better Business Bureau reports against them, blah, blah, blah. It will be able to create the task. It'll break it down and say, where can I find out about the supplier? Where can I see where there's been problems with the supplier? And then it'll give you the reason why. As your answer, you'll say, listen, this is why I think there's a problem. So so that's a growing and an emerging area, neurosymbolic AI. It's a little different than generative AI.
That's great insight. I think, JP, a good point. Helps taking out a lot of subjectivity in decision-making as well, right? And, you know, putting it on rules and patterns and hard data, right? So I think that's quite transformational.
Yeah, I wrote about it. It's really cool, right? I mean, the neurosymbolic AI is mixing like the policies and rule logic with the ability to recognize patterns. It's in its infancy. I've seen some good stuff. I think it has issues breaking down tasks, but at least it takes a shot. At least it says, you know, I think this is how these are the seven steps that, now, and then it usually goes and follows the seven steps before it gives you, it should come back and say, I think these are the seven steps. What do you think? It doesn't. Yeah, these are the seven steps. I'm going to go ahead and do it now. It's like, no, don't. But as you're watching the dollar sign, ding, ding. That may be a built-in feature. It's not a bug.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah. OpenAI's got to make money somehow. But yeah, so I mean, that's a great point you made around, you know, the supplier, you know, management and the end-tier relationships. Do you just out of curiosity, are any of your clients struggling with, you know, actually trying to eliminate waste in their own handling of things like inventory management, like at the warehouses? Do you usually typically get asked about things like real estate with regard to warehouse space? Should we open up another one? Where should I put a distribution center? Things like that. And, you know, and what are you thinking? You know, obviously great problems. AI should really attack these problems. These are the ones I learned on in college. You know, the distribution problems and where closest neighbor.
Yeah, no, so absolutely. I think the cases that you are, the questions and the use cases you are trying to describe, those are, I would say, probably some of the biggest challenges we see in retail, manufacturing, or for that matter, any heavy supply chain driven industry, right? So I personally work a lot in such cases. So, you know, the typical use cases when you go in, you will see a high inventory situation with a few traditional, so your original warehouses and a lot of overflow warehouses. So a typical work would first involve managing and mitigating the inventory, helping release some cash for the clients. Through inventory liquidation, through accelerated disposal and other mechanisms, before structurally resetting through some of the solutions we were just discussing, basically, right? Like, which is resetting the whole planning logic, make it more rule-driven, data-driven, basically, and then set up the client for success for future. right? So yeah, it's a bit of a mixed approach that we take to show immediate results and then set up more sustainable long-term solutions.
I'm not implying at all that you are using AI unethically in your job when I say this, but how has your job changed because of generative AI? See, when you do an assessment, if I were doing an assessment as you would in the client, right, I would just start logging everything into a document, and that document would become the RAG into a inference engine, and then I would ask questions. Like, so I would take all their, give me a file of all your existing inventory and the past sales on it. Give me all your tax, right? Give me how much you're paying for each, square foot in each one of your distribution centers, and all the overhead associated with that, what kind of land premiums you're paying, if you're leasing or whether you own, right? I would just take that and throw that all into an engine. And then I'd start asking the engine question, are you there? Are you doing that yet? And it's not bad. It's not like AI is doing the work for you. I don't want to imply that, but it's a smart use of the technology, is it not?
Absolutely. So I would say it's definitely aiding us, basically. So it's helping increase the speed of turnaround. And for that matter, clients are expecting a lot faster answers as well, right? Because they're used to it. They are used to seeing it get done faster with some of the more simplistic AI solutions that they are using. So you're right. I think we have been on that same curve as well. So as A&M, we have a lot of internal A&M proprietary AI tools, and we keep on developing more, refining more as well. But how does it solve, let's say, my work at the client, my team's work at the client? I would say number one, helps increase the speed of turnaround significantly. Secondly, insights. So there are new insights, new ways of looking at data that we may have missed, because to some extent, we are also creatures of habit, right? So we are used to looking at data and working in a certain manner, right? So AI does help provide those alternate perspectives and much faster.
Yeah, it's nice not to have to open up the Excel sheets and look for baselines anymore, but you have actually a tool that you can query and say, what's the baseline based on this? Well, I want to thank you, Sari, for spending the time with me today on this. You've been, very informative, and clearly you've got a great grasp of this area as well, which I really enjoy learning from you and hearing from you, the type of things that you're working on. Any final words before we go?
No, I think, JP, very nice interacting with you as well. And I think, like I always would like to say, the best of AI is yet to come. A lot of things that we see and hear around, I think we have just probably touched the tip of the iceberg here. A lot more investment needs to happen. And before that, a lot more success stories need to come out before, you see that big rush of investment and the next generation of solutions, right? And very interested to see what you were describing earlier as well of how the journey beyond generative AI looks like, right? So I think those will be very disruptive and progressive, I would say, from the field of procurement and supply chain perspective.
I thought of one more quick one. Do you have any clients who have had a failed AI proof of concept or pilot around what's going on that you're aware of?
I can't talk about some of these things very openly, but I won't say there have been any such material cases. I think it's still early stage investments. Clients typically still follow that fail fast, fail small type of an approach. So nothing material that would, set you back by a few years. I think all of those are learning experiences only, and helps make the next wave of solutions better and sharper.
Great. Thank you again, Sari. I look forward to having you on again in the future.
Thanks, JP. Appreciate your time. Take care.
Bye.